my name is Freya, and welcome back to The Only Way is Reading, the Essex Libraries podcast talking about all things book. Now, today I am joined by a very special co-star and some even more special guests. And without any further ado, I will hand over to my co-star, Millie, who will be telling you more about what we're talking about today.
Hello. This week, we'll be discussing how reading can benefit one's well-being and mental health. We'll be discovering how reading can help reduce stress levels, reduce anxiety, and help you find balance in the world we live in. My name is Millie Smith, and I'm part of the marketing team at Essex Libraries, and I'll be leading the discussion today. Let's go around and introduce ourselves.
Hi, my name's Craig. I'm a customer service assistant, and I work at Braintree Library.
Hi, my name's Corinna. I'm also a customer service assistant, and I work at Chelmsford Library.
Hi, my name's Fleur. I'm also a customer service assistant, but I work at Danbury Library.
Hi, my name's Jeff. I work in the central team as a service delivery plan manager.
Hi, my name is Sid Moore, and I am a writer and the author in residence for Essex Libraries.
Lovely to meet you all. So let's start off with the first question. What do you turn to help when you find yourself stressed or anxious?
If I'm honest, I really like to get outside. So if I'm stressed or anxious, I try and build in a walk every day. I'm lucky enough to live by the sea, so that gets me out there and I get to have some time to myself.
I grew up on the seaside and I can echo what Jeff said, but I do miss it after moving to Essex a few years ago. You can't beat the sea air just to help you relax. So if you can feel all your stress wash away as the salty wind just hits you in the face. Cold, but fun.
Yeah, I agree. Just getting out and about, and I don't live by the sea, sadly, but I do like to go in sort of woodland and by water as well. It's really nice. I think it relaxes you.
Yeah, hi. So I'm just going to sound like an echo chamber here, but I totally agree with Dave and Jeff, because I love the sea. And so I try to swim in it as well. And I'm probably going to have a swim Easter bank holiday. But some of my friends swim every day. One of them's just swum. So they're really hardcore. I'm not that hardcore. But I think it's really, really important to get out into nature. And I think the really interesting thing about the sea, and Ken Walpole, who's a writer, once said that, if you go down and you look out to the sea, it throws back to you your mood. It's like a mirror. It reflects it back to you. And whatever you're like in your life, you can go down to the sea and you can feel yourself there. You see how you feel, if you know what I mean. You find clarity.
Yeah, the beach is definitely my favourite place also. It's lovely. What about you, Freya?
There is just absolutely something about the sea air. So very much agree with the sea air comment. I'm one for the forest. I don't know what that says about me. That makes me very mysterious. But I really like being around trees. And maybe it's just the increased oxygen in the air, or the clean oxygen in the air, that helps with headspace. But that and at nighttime, the moon is very therapeutic, I think. It's nice to be out and about, and it almost gets you out of your own head a lot of the time. I think being out in nature really helps you kind of process more complex emotions.
I agree completely. I find when I was a child, I used to like looking up at the sky and looking at all the stars, because it used to make me feel really small, and I'd kind of think all of my worries I had, yeah, they were important to me at the time, but they won't be in a day or two, because it makes you feel how big the universe is at the time. It's lovely. Yeah. Okay. So it's also been said that losing yourself in a good book can help reduce your stress levels. With this in mind, how do you think reading can help with your mental health?
So for me, I used to suffer with depression a lot for a very, very long time. And I would know that I was going to have an episode if I stopped reading, you know, if I avoided books. So actually, that was a bit of a warning to me, that actually pick a book up, find that thing that you really love doing. So when I'm reading lots, then I know that my mental health, my well-being is really kind of on fire. You know, I'm in a good place. And when I'm not, then it's kind of a warning to pick a book up and lose myself in that.
I was going to say, so do you find losing yourself in a book helps you escape almost reality and lets you focus on something?
It's a bit of that. Sometimes it's like some of the anxiety used to come from feeling like life was running away. So reading, you take some control and you can pick what you read. So I used to read a novel and then a history book and then a science book, kind of almost on rotation, and just learn and experience. So definitely you can lose yourself in a book, and it's a fantastic thing. I'm so glad that I read and that my son reads and that my parents read. So
yeah, I was just gonna say what you're saying about escaping reality. I think I agree with that. When you're with a book, you're having a kind of quiet moment where you're just concentrating on one thing, and you're not kind of because I think in modern day life we've got so many different kind of, we're bombarded by information all the time from different sources, and when you're with a book, you're just with one thing, and it's somebody's thoughts and somebody's feelings that they've kind of taken time to find a way to express, and often, like, just getting into somebody else's head is kind of a helpful way of getting out of your own head and kind of getting perspective on your situation, and I think perspective and kind of balance is something that you can really get from reading. Yeah.
Do you find sometimes hearing people's worries in a book can help your worries feel more valid by reading through their worries?
Definitely, yeah. The feeling that somebody else has felt either similar to you, or it doesn't even have to be exactly the same, but sometimes it really resonates what you're reading with something, and you think, oh my god, you know, how did somebody else has felt this as well. So it makes you feel less lonely, I suppose, as well, in that feeling. Yeah,
100%.
I think sometimes when you're stressed or you're not feeling well, sometimes rereading a book that I've read before, it's like meeting an old friend again. It's comfortable and it's really secure. And if things are swimming in the world around you, it's really comfortable to go back to something that you've really enjoyed, and you put your feet back on the ground. And that might be a book that takes you to a place. We talked about nature earlier. Maybe it's a book that's got a very, very strong sense of place, someone like Ellie Griffiths or The Salt Path, or maybe it's a book that takes you back to something that you read in your childhood, but that can just be a way of calming the world down and revisiting something that actually you know where it's going, and it just gives you a moment to breathe whilst meeting up with someone you haven't met for a while. It is, and sometimes it's also really challenging. We'll talk about book groups, I'm sure, but I've gone back and read a book again that I'd read previously, and you understand something completely differently or from a different character's point of view because your life experience changed or because you visited somewhere. And that's really exciting, because something that you knew you re-know and something that you've read before you re-understand. And it's like discovering the last chocolate in a box you thought was empty.
Yeah, again, sort of echoing what Jeff said, I noticed, and I don't know if everybody else was the same, but during the pandemic, I just couldn't read. I found it so difficult to concentrate on reading for pleasure and for work as well. It was a struggle. And I think that's because we were all so panicked about the world outside, that you felt that you had to be focused. You know, it's like I had that feeling that you get sometimes, that when you're on a plane and you see the pilot coming down, I sort of felt like, oh, I've got to be focused for the government, you know, like on this thing. And it took me ages to find my reading mojo again, to be honest. But I find one of the things I do is I'm a Royal Literary Fund lector for something called a reading round, and every week I meet with a group and I read out to them a short story, and then we discuss it, and then we have a break, then I read them a poem and we discuss it and have a break. And actually, you know, that has been fantastic, because you with short stories. I mean, I can read short stories again and again and again, and I'm like Fleur. I can't return to novels most of the time. I find myself, if I go back to novels, I'm actually not as wowed by them the second time, which is a real shame. So I kind of leave them alone. But there are short stories that I will reread and reread and reread with the same effect as Fleur's, that you just find something new about them. And I think there's, last night I did read a Dream Cargoes by J.G. Ballard. And it's about a freighter going into a washed up garbage island, but it leaks nuclear waste. And actually what happens is there's this amazing wildlife springs out of it and it's all verdant. And actually the whole group was transported somewhere else with these amazing visual, lush descriptions. And, you know, yesterday was a pretty horrible night. And actually for that moment while we read it, which was about an hour, we were in this fantastic, literally fantastical place, which was amazing. And literature is the only thing that can really do that with all your senses. So you were reading about the tastes of the fruit and the feel of them. And, you know, even when you watch a movie or something, you can be transported, but you can't smell it and you can't feel it. And literature has that's really great power.
Yeah, just what Sid said around the pandemic. So I struggled as well then. And then I picked up a book that really spoke out. It was by Albert Camus and it's called The Plague. And it's about an outbreak of a plague in Algeria in the late 40s. And actually reading that, the experiences within that story resonated so, so much with everything that was going on, from people who said it doesn't exist, from people who wanted to escape lockdown, everything about it. And it was kind of darkly reassuring. You know, we'd been here before and you know, at the end, everyone came out of it. You know, it's really powerful stuff. And then what Fleur said earlier around kind of, I look at books sometimes where you understand that there's more that joins us as human beings than you perhaps imagine. So I went to boarding school in Lancashire and I read a book by a Chinese author written in the 17th century called Cao Shi Quin. And it was talking about, it's almost Billy Bunter sort of boarding school behaviour in China in the 17th century. I thought, yeah, that's my life now. So, you know, there's so much about books. It's absolutely awesome. It can really take you wherever you want to go.
I was just going to say, I'm very much like Fleur and unlike Sid, where I can regularly devour long books. I totally agree with the coming home to an old friend. I'm quite a fast reader. So once I get going and I'm really enjoying it, I have to consume it all within about a 24-hour period, which wreaks havoc for my sleep and consequently well-being. But I just have to consume this, so I have to know what happens. I'm so invested. And so I can go back about 3 or 4 times before I'm like, oh, I remember this bit, because I just become like absolutely obsessed with this world and these characters. And I almost live their life for a short time. And I don't know about anybody else, but then I get the book hangover where you kind of sit with your feelings afterwards for a minute and you just think, what am I going to do now? I can't go back there. The magic is not there anymore. And it is there, but it's not in the same way. It's like like when you look at old holiday photos and you think, oh, that was a really lovely time, but it wasn't, you weren't in there in the moment on the water slide.
Yeah. There's loads of stuff now, because every time someone says something, I think, oh yeah, that's true, yeah. I'll start with what Sid was saying about reading to people, because I'm part of a shared reading group, which is a kind of it's a type of book group, but it's a different model, because we meet online, but they lots of people meet in person as well, to read short stories or poems or extracts, and we read it together as part of the session and then discuss it. And it's the idea is to kind of talk about your sort of initial response to the text. And it's a really, I think it's a really interesting way to you know, look at literature, because we're reading something aloud in a group is quite is quite powerful, I think. And it gives you this sort of platform or a vocabulary and it can be, you know, people, because my group is online, so people come from all over the world. Actually, there's people from, you know, America, and we've all got, you know, quite different lives, but we have this kind of thing in common, which is the text. And then we talk about that. So I think, yeah, that's quite an interesting thing.
Well, you led me on very nicely to my next question, which is book groups. So obviously at Essex Libraries, we encourage people to form their own book groups and take part in them. So we have obviously promoted it as a great way to socialise and discuss the books you have been reading. So my next question is anyone part of a book group? And how do you think this benefits people's mental health?
Obviously the reading round is my sort of book group, so I don't know if that's a similar thing. We don't have to read before we get there, like I think Corinna was saying. Nobody has to read anything, you just read it out at the time. So there's a difference to a traditional book group. But that's it. I'm not in any other book groups. We're very unlikely people as well. You look at us, you'd think if we went to the pub, you just look at us and think, God, how do those people know each other? We're just so diverse. But we all come together because we love literature, we love books, we love short stories, we love poems, and they make us feel good.
It gives you endorphins, doesn't it? It's like exercise. It helps your mental health by giving you endorphins.
Yeah,
it's lovely. Craig?
Technically not a book group, but we, you know, a few years ago, I did start a creative writing group with a few colleagues I work with and a few friends. And we met every 2 weeks. We would get a theme. We would then go away and write things, come back, and then everyone read out their story. And then we would discuss it and talk about it. And if someone revealed that they never read horror or, oh, they don't do poetry, guess what became the next topic that they had to then go away and do? And it was amazing to then see that people who struggled with it, they would talk about it and they would write something. And it showed that they had the ability within them and they were tapping into a side of themselves that they clearly didn't think they had. We had a one of my friends really, really wasn't, all they could ever write was fantasy. They couldn't write anything realistic, because they thought it was too much like real life and they didn't want to focus on that. And then one week they came in with this really heartbreaking short story about a couple breaking up, and it was fantastic, and we never knew that they had it in them. And they thought we were just, you know, pleasing them by saying, oh, that was really good. But once they'd even left the group, the ones that were left were gobsmacked. And I think you can get just as much happiness and joy discussing books as well as reading them. And also just seeing someone else be happy with a book can make you feel really good as well. There are certain books I will never read, but I have one of my best friends and colleagues will regularly read a book, and then they love it so much that they will tell me about it. And they speak so animatedly about it that I have to wait a few more days for them to finish the book so they can come and tell me the rest of it. I'll never have to read it myself, but I just love it, and seeing them smile, and then I'm asking questions and they'll keep saying, you don't want to read it? It goes, no, I'm enjoying this too much. You keep going. It's brilliant.
So there's actually a word for talking about books, and I discovered this on my research. It's called bibliotherapy. So actually it's a form of therapy. By talking about reading and the books you're reading, you bring benefits to other people's mental health, just like you were saying, Craig, how you can feed off other people's energy from a book and you don't need to read it yourself, but you still get the excitement from it and it gives you a really nice feeling afterwards.
Maybe as librarians, we need to have that as like a doctorate on our walls or something, to say that we are all bibliotherapists.
I'll get that sorted for you.
Thank you.
I want to say that it's that it could put a little plug in for BorrowBox as well, and books that you can listen to, because if when you are struggling, sometimes to sit down and concentrate for a long period of time is really hard, isn't it? But actually, BorrowBox or the BBC Sounds, where they've got the book of the week and it's maybe only 15 minutes, or you could split that into 3-5 minutes. You could go for a walk. If we're outside, you can listen. So for even if you don't feel like you can sit down and read because your mind is everywhere, we've all known times like that, somebody else can read to you, which is a bit like Sid's group, isn't it, where other people read to you. And that's such a joy to hear someone who's reading something that they're enjoying, whether that's a poet from the National Poetry Archives or a short story or an excerpt from a book.
On the audiobook, so one of the authors I really like is Alice Roberts, who's an archaeologist. She's on telly sometimes, but I got one of her audiobooks called Tamed, and she reads it herself, which makes such a difference, because when the author reads it, then you're getting their voice, whereas I've heard others where it's an actor and it's kind of weird. She's absolutely awesome, really engaging, and she really takes you in. And from that, I've then started to buy her books and actually read them. I find them really engaging and really, really well put together. So love audiobooks. I never would have thought I'd said that before.
Going off the audiobooks, I'm never a fan of them. I used to find that I would easily fall asleep. If I'm holding a physical book, I have to do something so it keeps me awake. But my partner, I've been with him for 15 years. He's never read a single book. It's always been a joke between us that why in the hell am I with someone who doesn't read books? I'm a librarian. What's going on? Then one day he randomly turns to me and says, "Have you read The Martian by Andy Weir?" And I said, "No." He says, "Oh, because I've just finished listening to it." And he'd been listening to it because he'd heard someone mention it and he listened to it. And then I was so happy. And just to hear him talk about it, we managed to have the conversation of, well, the book was better when we watched the film, which I've never had that before. And then slowly but surely, he would start listening to more and more books. And I was giving him recommendations as he went to and from work. And he would, the glee in his face when he told me, "I'm up to 12 this year now." And I'd be thinking, "You never read a book." So I actually went and bought a nice hardback edition of The Martian, which is now just on our shelf as like, don't read this. This is to look at, as to commemorate the fact that you learned how to listen to a book. And I was just so happy.
So I've only actually got one more question left, which is, a new form of genre that has developed recently is books to do with self-help and mental health. So self-help books, otherwise is what they're known as. Are there any books you're reading or have read about mental health and well-being, and how have these helped? Leah?
I thought this question might come up. So as a librarian, I came prepared. I've got a couple of books that I think are just quite good for different reasons. Reasons to Stay Alive, Matt Haig. I love him as an author. I don't think he's perfect, but I think he's really honest and real. And the chapters, I mean, one of the chapters is not even three paragraphs, and he's just really on it. He knows what it's about. It's completely factual. And he starts one chapter, which it says, "Depression is also ... smaller than you. Always it is smaller than you, even when it feels vast." And he goes on to talk about how even when there are clouds, the sky is bigger. And it's just a very short paragraph, full of hope that he's experienced. So I think that's really good. And the other one I found really helpful, I can't pronounce it, author, Naoki Higashiori. It's called The Reason I Jump. And it's a boy who is severely autistic, and he's written about his own autism. And he answers different questions about his own autism. And one of the questions is, do you prefer to be on your own? And then he explains why it looks like he prefers to be on his own, but actually why he's learned to be on, why he ends up being on his own, but why his behaviours are actually, he would like to be with other people, but he's trying to learn them. And I think it really helped me understand the world from a different person's point of view. It's under our Reading Well section in the library. And I found it tremendously uplifting that a boy was who'd had so many challenges could put into words and really think through ways to help me understand how he was. And it's a tremendously uplifting book, as well as really poignant. A little bit, I suppose, like the butterfly bell jar with the written by one eyelid. So those were two books that I found helpful in really different ways.
They're great recommendations. Sid,
One of the things I'm doing as the for the residency is I've been putting together a short story and poetry pharmacy, which is inspired by the book edited by William Seacart called The Poetry Pharmacy, which I think people were nodding here that I can see, which is an amazing book, actually. I love it so much. The sort of William Seacart is a psychotherapist, and he feels that there is a for every kind of malaise that you have or difficult experience, there is a poem that will help you. And it's not just the poems that he selects, but also the words, his explanation about the poems and about some of the patients he has treated and how they've responded to these poems. And when I was visiting, it was either Billericay or Rayleigh with the Poetry Pharmacy. There was one of them I was talking about to someone about sort of how you feeling in the world, blah, blah, blah. And so I selected a poem and I read out the preface to it. And then I read out this very, very short poem by Hafez, which is called My Brilliant Image. And I read it very quickly, and when I finished, the lady who I was reading it to just burst into tears. And she said, thank you, you know, thank you. Nobody said something as beautiful and as positive as that for many years. And, you know, again, although it's not directly connected, it's not a self-help book, there is so much help in there. And it really is. It's like an ointment for the soul, all of these different conditions you can have. They're not going to help anything, but they're just, there's another poem, which is Sometimes by Sheila Pugh. And this poem called Sometimes by Sheila Pugh is just a reminder that actually sometimes things go right. You know, we kind of, because we've been so through so much, we sort of expect the worst. I think you're sort of still in that mode of expecting. I'm sure we will still feel the cortisol, but yeah, the poem Sometimes is just a reminder that you sometimes the worst doesn't happen, sometimes the best happens, and it still can. And it's a poem that I have printed up and put around different parts of the house so that I can see it unexpectedly and remind myself, yeah, you know, the future can be really good. Things aren't always bad. Sometimes they are, but not always.
I think that's a lovely note to end our podcast on. Thank you, everyone. It's been lovely talking to you. I'll hand back over to Freya.
Thank you very much, Millie. And I want to echo that again. This has been fabulous. Thank you so much for your honesty and just kind of really opening your hearts this episode and giving some really beautiful insight. If I may, I would love to ask on a final note, one thing that you would say to somebody or that you have said to yourself in the past to lift their spirits. And I'll go Corinna first.
Okay, that's difficult. I guess, something that my dad said to me once, which I found quite helpful and which I say to myself if I'm ever worried about stuff. He said, whatever is right. I think it was Alexander Pope who said that, but I find it quite helpful because it's quite calming. Whatever is right.
I like that. Thank you. Craig?
A few years ago, I was diagnosed with anxiety and depression, and one of the things that one of my friends said to me was, if you need to talk, there's always going to be somebody out there who will listen to you. And I thought that was, you know, it was very sweet because they weren't just telling me that they would listen, but just get it off your chest, don't hold it in. And I've then used that same sentence to other people, and I just think it's quite nice.
Yeah, I like that one. Sid?
Well, I'm going to try and memorise this because this is this very short poem by Hafez, which is from My Brilliant Image, and it just says,
I wish I could show you, when you are lonely or in darkness, the astonishing light of your own being.
And Fla?
So for me, I'm a Christian, and the thing that gives me the most hope, and I think the thing I hang on to, is a phrase in the Bible when Jesus said, "Come to me, all ye who are heavy burdened, and I will give you rest." And ultimately, that's what I cling on to. If I need to, ultimately, that's where I would go.
Brilliant. And Jeff?
So my son got an autism diagnosis at the start of this year. And obviously it's quite a big thing for someone. And the next day he went into school and he came home and said, "Was it any different to how you were yesterday?" He said, "No." "Yeah, I mean, is it any different? You know, are you any worse off?" "No, I'm better." And to be honest, he's happier now than he was before the diagnosis. So, you know.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much. So this has been The Only Way Is Reading. My name is Freya with my co-host Millie and my wonderful guests, Fleur, Sid, Craig, Jeff and Corinna. Next episode is going to be a International Women's Day / Women's History Month special with Sid again. So watch out for that. You can find us on pretty much all social media channels. And if anybody has any book recommendations for lifting your mood, please get in touch. Thank you.